just want to start off by mentioning that last week we had the homegoing for a wonderful Malander, Congressman Cummings, who loved his country, loved his state, and his hometown of Baltimore City. And it was a great tribute to him in Baltimore as well as at the Capitol. And I think we'll all miss him. I also want to mention the fact that our very own Ryan of the Senate has announced last week that he's stepping down as Senate President, but he'll continue in his role as Senator. But someone who will be missed, who definitely has made history during his time, and it'll be a lot of changes around here, and particularly an interesting opening of session, and we'll have two new leaders of the legislature. First time in decades. Could jokingly say centuries, but
1987.
When all of us were children at that time. So, not quite. But I just want to, you know, my condolences to the Cummings family, but also just, you know, pray for Senator Miller and thank him for his long service to the state of Maryland. Madam Treasurer?
Very well taken. Thank you, Governor. I just want to add my voice to your fine words. Elijah Cummings was also a great leader in Annapolis. In addition to Washington, and I think that's where so many of us remember him. He was our Speaker pro tem, and you could hear his booming voice even then. It boomed even louder when he got to Washington, but a great thinker, a great orator, an inspiration then and an inspiration now. I know those of us who were at the service on Friday will never forget it. It was a time of celebration of a great man, but also, as the bishop said, of recentering, of rededication for all the people who were there. 4,000 people, a huge, huge sanctuary, and yet everybody felt like a family and was rededicated together. It was amazing. He will be sorely missed. And Mike Miller, what can you say? Thank heavens he'll still be here, because there is no man, I think, who has loved the Senate and the House and the process and the legislative body and the understanding of the role of the legislature more than Mike. And his leadership, I was going to say his moral leadership, but he'd probably beat me over the head if I accused him of moral leadership. But his great leadership based on a true understanding of what the legislature can be, should be, I believe, will stand throughout history as the embodiment of a leader who is of his institution as well as the leader of his institution. Might not agree with every issue, I understand that, and might not always agree with the language that Mike chooses to use. But the fact is, a true leader who has been an inspiration, I will say, as someone who's been involved in legislative organizations across the country, inspiration for many all over the state. In terms of how to build balanced leadership and how to move forward, keeping people together. And I'm glad that he will be there to give advice to the brilliant new president-to-be of the Senate. Okay. I know the other major issue before us today, I assume you will mention later on, so I won't start now.
Yes, I think it's with Secretary's agenda.
This is a day for celebration for a lot of things. Thank you.
Very much. Mr. Cartola?
Yes, speaking of celebrations, did anyone see the baseball game last night?
Yeah,
I stayed up for it.
So. And they're playing in Houston tonight, which apparently is good.
Yes.
It is a good thing. Right. And let me add to that. I have added interest in it because at the Cummings funeral, I happened to be sitting beside Congressman Al Green. And, of course, at the time, the Nationals were up 2-0, and he was saying something about he had to leave. I said, so you're not staying for the game tonight? Because he's from Houston. And so he gave me a little hard time about that. And I said, well, you know, it's only 2 games. It's just 2 games. Yeah, but all hope is not lost for Houston, but, you know, it's whatever. And he said, well, I tell you what, if Houston wins, you have to buy me a Texas-size dinner, and if the Nationals win, then he will buy me a whatever Maryland-size dinner. Yeah. Eastern Shore chicken, whatever I decide. So I have added incentive for them to win. So.
Excellent. I just wanted to comment about last week I announced that I will be establishing a task force to study the health and safety impacts of so-called electronic smoking devices. These are the vaping devices that are so wildly popular among particularly young people these days. My job as Maryland's chief tobacco regulator is to protect public health, keep any and all of these products out of the hands of kids. So the situation right now with e-cigarettes and vaping devices, we have a product that's making people sick. We have a product that's causing real and lasting damage to people. We have a product that, according to a growing number of national reports, are killing people. And right now, we just don't know enough about them. We don't know what they're really composed of, how they're truly being used, or the differences between these products that are being made, products that are being made by national manufacturers and those that are being concocted in a basement somewhere. Although recently the biggest national manufacturer, the fired CEO, claims that there are all sorts of unannounced contaminants that have been put even in their products. I truly believe this is one of those instances where the marketplace is moving at a faster pace than the government. We can't walk into a convenience store, for example, to buy a bottle of water or a candy bar that hasn't been scrupulously regulated by the federal government. But we don't have a real set of laws and regulations in place for a nicotine product that people are putting into their lungs. That's what our new task force, titled E-Facts, is all about. We have to learn more about these products in order to determine the best possible course of action. I look forward to working with all of the stakeholders, doctors, hospitals, public health officials, advocates, policymakers, small business owners, manufacturers, legislators, to find a smarter way forward on an issue where lives are literally at stake. Lieutenant Governor, I just want to add that my office has spoken with Secretary Neal and both presiding officers about participating in the task force. It's my hope that we can have bipartisan representation from the legislature and experts from the Department of Health. Thank you for letting me make that brief statement. It's an important subject because, for whatever reason, these products have been exempt from even basic things like listing on the product what's in the product. So we're going to get to the bottom of it in a very speedy group of 4 public hearings, and I think that everybody will benefit once we get more facts out on the table.
Well, it is quite a phenomenon of something that went from a replacement to actual burning cigarette smoke to now something that young people in particular, who never smoked, all of a sudden are using these types of devices. And the CDC recently found that close to 80% of the people that they, in the survey they did, who were experiencing these health issues also had THC in their vape. So I'm not sure if those were bootleg versions or something that they got from dispensaries or whatever the case may be, but there definitely needs to be a closer look. As you said, the marketplace and policy in some cases has gotten ahead of technology, and we've seen that in other areas. That was the case many, many years ago with regard to cigarettes themselves and tobacco. I personally think we're seeing the same thing with regard to marijuana. that the policy is getting well ahead of the science, and the federal government needs to take a look. And for the very same reasons that you said, you know, everything else that you purchase, anything else that you're prescribed, has gone through some type of regulatory process and testing, some review to tell you exactly what's in it and what the benefits and negative aspects are of it. We've all seen those pharmaceutical commercials where they scare you half to death about all the things that they could cause, including death in many cases. But they've gone through this review. So I agree and look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Secretary.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 22 items on the Secretary's agenda, 3 reports of emergency procurement. We had 16 items on the agenda when it was printed. We added a hand-carried item yesterday, and then items 18 to 22 were walked into this morning, but they appear on the Internet now, and we have copies if anybody needs them.
Okay, and 18 through 22 are the provisions for those gentlemen who were wrongly convicted of crimes and served time in our state penal system. And so I know that the treasurer had mentioned she wanted to say something about this, but it is, you know, we're bringing this matter to, you know, a just and rightful close. Hopefully the individuals who also needed additional assistance through this process will get that, the assistance that they need. I know we helped them at one point getting into a facility, and so, you know, I hope this will help in that whole process. Madam Treasurer.
I'd just like to thank all the staff and the comptroller, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general's office, everyone who has worked on this project, but more importantly, this payment of several million dollars is, in fact, a very small token of the heartfelt apologies of the state and all of our citizens to 5 people. I notice it says erroneously convicted. That's very antiseptic. These are men who spent thousands of days, thousands of mornings, one of them almost 50 years in prison, for the most part because of not only that were they innocent of crime, but others worked to get them where they did not belong. And there's no way, I believe, that we can sufficiently apologize or that we can believe that an amount of money can make up for a person's life. So I just want to thank those men, acknowledge the sacrifice that they made, hope that they understand that this is their community's way of recognizing that not only were they innocent, but they were terribly, terribly wronged. And I apologize. In addition, I'd like to point out that while our staff and the Office of Attorney General and everyone worked very hard, I fear this would not have come to us were it not for the hard work of attorneys who care very much about this situation and about these particular gentlemen. People who work pro bono, people like the Innocence Project, who have devoted hours, years, sometimes their lives, to trying to see justice finally done. And so we all, I think, ought to acknowledge them and support them in their future endeavors, too. Nice.
Thank you, Governor.
Lieutenant Governor, if I could just make a comment also. Obviously, I associate myself with the remarks of the Lieutenant Governor and the Treasurer, and very pleased that Jerome Johnson, Lamar Johnson, Walter Lomax, Clarence Shipley, Hubert James Williams, who are all victims of a broken criminal justice system, and even though no dollar amount can restore what was stolen from them, I hope that today's action brings some solace and a sense of vindication for these 5 individuals. Each of them will be receiving approximately $78,000 for every year they spent in incarceration, an amount that represents the median household income in Maryland. We chose the median household income intentionally because through their erroneous conviction and incarceration, these five men were deprived of the opportunity to have a household and the opportunity to gain an income and make contributions to their communities and to our state. Along with the Lieutenant Governor and the Treasurer, I'd like to tip my hat to the board staff for all their hard work behind the scenes that made today's action possible. But I particularly want to salute John Gontram, who is looks like he just got out of high school here. He's a very talented lawyer, and he came up with the objective number of the median family income. We don't have to go through this anymore in future years. If an individual is determined by the courts and all of the representative bodies to have been falsely incarcerated, we can simply take the median family income. That's an objective number. It's not something we're picking out of the air, $50,000, $100,000. Where did that come from? No, this figure is something that can be relied upon both by this panel, the Board of Public Works, but also hopefully in the legislature if they choose to revisit this issue. But this particular formula should take care of this issue, not just for these five individuals, but for, unfortunately, anyone that may follow in their footsteps. I hope there are none, but to the extent there are, we don't have to go through a lengthy process reinventing the wheel. This is a good development, not just for these individuals, but also for anyone else deserves to be compensated in this manner. And I agree with the Treasurer. We're compensating people with money, but guess what? We took from them decades of their, sometimes decades in instances of their lives. How do you pay that back? So hats off to everyone involved. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor and Madam Treasurer. Thank you particularly for your outspokenness. Seriously, thank you. And also to the staff.
Okay. Well, thank you. And
yeah, I move approval of that item. Okay. If we could separate it.
We can do that.
Second.
All in favor? Yes, you can't make up time. That's one thing you can't get back. So thank you very much. I want to point out item 15. Which is Stadium Authority, and it is the construction of the Calvert Elementary Middle School, construction management.
Mr. McQuiggan, Mr. Johnson are here from the Stadium Authority.
Good morning. Gary McQuiggan with the Stadium Authority. Happy to answer any questions.
Good morning. I wanted to point out that this is one of the nearly billion-dollar school construction program that is going on in Baltimore City. I think you're up to... I'm not sure what number you're up to in terms of schools that have been completed.
We have 11 open to date.
11 new schools,
yeah,
or renovated schools that have been opened, and we're on track for
27 to 28.
27. See, you beat me on that. So I think that is something that we should all be proud of, and particularly for those children who are going to have a new, bright facility that they're going to be able to go to. The Treasurer and I were at a school opening, the Reach School, a couple of weeks ago, and that was, you know, quite impressive reuse of an old building. And as a person who really appreciates the architecture of the older buildings, I typically like that versus our kind of modern Soviet architecture that we use now. So. I don't know if there are any other questions.
Yeah, I do have a question. I know you're making a significant effort to make these buildings green, energy efficient, and at times carbon neutral. Can you just talk about that briefly, where you are on that?
Sure. All the schools are at least LEED Silver. We've been working on the control systems and daylight harvesting. Where we can, we put geothermal in, but because of the sites in the city, that's only been a handful of schools. But all the schools have a lot of environmental energy efficient measures.
I believe the Reed School was a silver.
The Reed was the silver. And what about the carbon neutral ones? Am I right in thinking that?
Those three projects that are being managed by city schools, they're net zero. They're designed for net zero.
All right. So those are because they're new buildings, they can do that?
Yes.
Is there any way we can incorporate that into our plans going forward? I understand that it's hard to do as a retro.
We actually looked at being able to do that. It was a grant that came through the Energy Administration for those, and the projects that are identified in our program would not qualify for it, but we continue to look for ways.
And was the grant for looking at it or for actually doing it?
Designing
it. And how much was the grant?
I think it was $3.5 million.
For two schools?
Yeah.
It's not a huge amount of money for the savings that it represents. Are you all looking at something like that? I'm looking at Gary.
Yeah. we looked at it for a few schools, as Eric said, but why don't we take a deeper dive as we progress through the program and take one more look and do a full analysis.
Do you have a goal to try to be as energy efficient and carbon neutral as possible?
Yes. It's as we do the individual projects, we look at them individually. I mean, one of the goals is make sure the maintenance costs and the operational costs are less so that a strapped school district like Baltimore City can afford the schools. So we do energy modeling during design to look at the utility consumption. And we've really been focusing on the dollar amount, but we can take a step back and take a
look. I think that would be helpful. You know, the governor has got a goal of a reduction of non-green energy uses, as well as our shared state goal for reducing climate impact, which can't be done without changes, which may be initially expensive, but in the long run, significantly saving of both the environment and our resources. So I would think that as one of the leading construction agencies in this state, you would be a leader in this too, Gary.
We will definitely take a step back and a broader and deeper dive.
That's great.
You mentioned something about geothermal. What were the issues or are the issues in Baltimore with regard to geothermal?
It's the tight sites. In an urban area, a lot of these sites are fairly small, and just making sure that it makes sense from putting it in on the site and also from a cost standpoint. I mean, balancing the capital costs and the operational costs is constant struggle.
Right. Okay. Right.
Although you know the state is going in the direction of trying to look essentially at life cycle costing and not just
understood.
Upfront.
Yeah, we've been talking to Mr. Grell about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, could I ask, Lieutenant Governor, did we approve separately items 18 through 22?
18 to 22
yes.
Have been approved.
Have been approved.
Okay.
Excellent. I have item 17.
Item 17 is a settlement that was given to
that's the hand, other hand in.
Mass Transit Administration, MDOT. I don't know, Mr. Ron, if you want to introduce it, you want your Attorney General to.
We can have
Mr. Hardwick's
here. I might be able to answer questions as well.
Well, I'm going to vote no on it. I'm not going to go into all the specifics. I'm perfectly willing to have folks go into it if they wish to. But it's a $100,000 settlement. I think my colleagues are aware of the situation. But I happen to strongly believe that the taxpayers of Maryland should not be cutting a check to an employee who made racially offensive comments to her colleagues. So please, if we could pull this out also and I could be recorded on the negative, I would appreciate it, Governor.
Mr. Comptroller, I understand totally your statement and sentiment. The issue, I believe, though, is that if we don't address it here, the potential loss to the state taxpayers could be much greater if it ends up going to trial.
Yeah. No from me, but thank you for that concern.
I don't know if there's anything that gentleman can add.
Thank you, Secretary.
Yeah, sure. So Kevin Quinn, Administrator MDOT-MTA, thank you for having us here. I'll introduce Eric Hartwig, our Assistant Attorney General, who may be able to address this.
Yes, Your Honor. My name is again Eric Hartwig.
Maybe I'll change my vote. Keep going, Eric.
As has been addressed, this matter does have the potential to lead to additional litigation. For that reason, we do believe at this time the request for $100,000 is in the state's best interest, so the agency and state can move on from the matter. And I do appreciate your concerns, but we do request that this matter be approved.
I guess I would add, Mr. Comptroller, that we found this just as appalling, and that's why we took the initial action, and we are where we are as a result. We did not believe that the statements made were appropriate at all and should not have continued.
Yeah, I think the challenge, as I understand it, is, and like you said, the conduct was terrible. You took action that had some challenges associated with it procedurally, but the if it goes to trial, a potential remedy would be that you have to take this person back, and then that person will be entitled to certain protections that could cause litigation on anything that they don't like in the future. I experienced something similar to this when I was General Services Secretary, and we didn't settle. We went to the mat on it, and we had to take the employees back. And that was a very difficult situation because they really could not do their job because of the sensitive nature of that they were in, and you still had to have them, and that was not good. So I understand the situation that the state is in, and MTA in this case.
I might as well chime in. Obviously, I think, to me, the most important thing is this person is no longer working for the people.
Right.
And is no longer representing the department and the state of Maryland. Clearly mistakes were made involving obtaining the information, whether, I don't know if it was wiretap or just listening or communicating in a way that can't be supported. And I hope that the result is new systems and better training so that won't happen again, but I hope even more that we won't have people representing the state saying the sort of thing that this individual did. So I sympathize completely with the comptroller, but I understand the argument of the lieutenant governor and with the support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But can you, we didn't hear from you, and I think it probably is not this moment, but from the department, or Greg, what's been done to prevent this ever happening again? It doesn't have to be this moment, then.
Yeah, so maybe we can converse about
it. But you're assuring us that the systems have been fixed so this can't happen
again. Absolutely.
Yes, once we were aware of the different circumstances that apply in this situation, it was resolved almost immediately.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. So we'll have a separate vote on this motion or this item. Do we have a motion on the vote?
I would approve the item.
Okay, and we're going to approve it 2-1 to the negative.
Thank you. Now 1-16 in the emergency sector.
Yep. Any other questions on the secretary's agenda?
Yes, I did. Item 13.
Item 13 is the Department of the Environment. This is the Southwest Regional Airport. I think it's great news. Coming up, we're hooking the airport up to the water.
Uh-huh.
For the record, I'm Suzanne Dorsey, Maryland Assistant Secretary, Maryland Department of the Environment.
Great. What is this grant for, or loan and grant?
This is part of our water quality financing, and we are looking at providing water supply financial assistance.
Excellent. And it has my full support. I happen to think that the mayor of Salisbury has done a fabulous job on this particular project. The airport, which is our state's second largest airport, plays a critical role in the region's economy, for example. And I know Mayor Day and the Salisbury City Council have expressed their strong support for this item. They certainly have to me personally. And Madam Treasurer, Madam Lieutenant Governor, it's kind of a dry technical subject, but it is, so to speak. But it's
we're an accepting society.
Yeah.
You called me madam.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. But this is important for that, for Salisbury and Wicomico County. So hats off to the agency.
Thank you. We're pleased to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Governor, could I also, Suzanne, on both 13 and 12, which is another MDE project that we've heard from the legislature about, not only because it's a great project and needed, but like 13 and 11, all projects of Department of Environment, I noticed that you are now putting on your item at the bottom, Coast Smart. This project will be constructed in accordance with coastal and non-coastal resiliency guidelines developed as part of the Coast Smart program to reduce climate change risks to such projects. And that's terrific to see that it has gone through a process before it comes to us to see how it is impacted by and impacts climate change. And this is a great model. You and the university system also.
Thanks to your leadership, we're allowed to recognize the hard work of our staff as they do consider these very carefully as they move forward. Thank you.
And I congratulate the folks in Salisbury for pushing to do that, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Move approval.
And 14.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, 14. Okay. There's one. I'll come back up.
No.
I'm fine.
Are you through, Madam Treasurer?
Yes, sir.
I would move approval of the named items.
Okay. We have a second. And I think we're all here. Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Department of Natural Resources.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway Riccio, Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. We have 6 items on our real property agenda today for which we are seeking approval and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Just letting some people transition. I just want to say thank you for accompanying me on park tours last week. We had nice stops at Susquehanna State Park, as well as Elk Neck State Park, and it was, a good time to get out on a beautiful day. A little chilly in the morning, but it warmed up, and it's we have wonderful state parks, 75, sometimes 76, depending on how you count them, throughout our state. And it's wonderful. They're wonderful family-friendly places to go to enjoy the diversity of our state and the outdoors. Some have cabins. Many have campgrounds. And it is something that I think we should encourage more of our Marylanders to get off their couch and away from their Twitters and things of that nature. And if you go to some of the Western provisions, they don't have any cell phone service or internet service. So if you want to unplug, that is very good. You know, as people nowadays panic when they leave the house and forget their phone. The other day I went to the store and I left my phone, and I came back home and I told my wife, I said, you know, it felt good not having my phone with me. It was slight panic, and then you say, where did you leave it? And then it's when I realized where I left it, I said, that's fine. I didn't lose it, so that's good. But sometimes it's good to be disconnected from... I say disconnected, but just a few years ago, we didn't walk around and be instantly available, you know, at every moment. So, we're not surgeons on call or OBGYNs and on call. So, and they can find us if they need us. So, thank you.
Governor, can I know yes. We've passed it and I support it, but the two... A1 and A2, the state police.
Right, we'll go back to them?
I think the gentleman just left.
Yeah, no. I understand that there are going to be discussions, it says, between the state police superintendent, aviation commanders, attorney general, chief procurement officer, budget and management, et cetera. I would hope the Board of Public Works staff would be involved in that, too.
Absolutely.
I think they have to understand why the regulations were changed,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
It wasn't. We don't want to use emergency as a workaround
something. Right. We understood when three came in this. We are working on it. We needed to get the reports to you because they've been awarded, but
it's we are all concerned that we don't want to look like we're playing games.
That's a good point.
To address a real problem.
Thank you.
Okay. That's a good point. And this, I guess, has been brought to Bob's attention. Bob, you're aware of the items associated with the state police helicopters? No? Okay. Well, we'll update you. Okay. All right. Okay. Any questions on Department of Natural Resources? So we have a motion to approve?
Yeah, move approve.
Okay. We're all in favor. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
University system.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have three items on the agenda. If you have any questions.
Just, I hope you'll tell the doubters back there how much we appreciate adding on the provisions at the bottom of here about opportunities for environmental sustainability and all the great things that you are doing, ranging from exterior envelope improvements to control of solar, interior solar heat gain, et cetera, to work examination of both energy and environmental impact into all these.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, I know item 2AE, I was at Towson yesterday and speaking to some students, and it came to mind with regard to when we were just talking about being disconnected, going to not being connected. I really feel in about 20 years there are going to be a lot of people, maybe 30, that are going to have neck problems with so many students that are walking around like this, walking into the street with their head down. You know, we stopped several times. The trooper was driving, and we would say, he didn't even look. She didn't even look.
It's good.
Headphones on, looking down like this, walking into the street. So,
we have
I know, you had no control over that.
We have signs. At my church, campus, which is UMB, we have billboards up.
They don't see them because they're looking down.
They're in the building, so we have to actually tell you, don't text and walk, but it doesn't do any good.
No, you have to send, maybe there can be alerts that go out.
Get a zap in there.
That would get Califox. Or put scoopers on the vehicles like they have on the old trains, so it gets the cattle.
I'll tell you quite candidly, when I was learning how to drive, decades, obviously, ago, we had to take driver ed and driver training first. And the one thing that everybody remembered from driver ed were the movies that showed what happened to kids who weren't looking, weren't doing what they should be doing, and you see them being wheeled out of operating rooms with missing limbs. That stuck. And that actually made a difference, I think. And sometimes you got to smack people upside the head like that.
Those old driver's ed and traffic school movies or something that they... I think parents now would be whining about little Johnny or Janie watching the blood curdling and things, that, even though they play video games. They play video games that are much more graphic than that, but they would be all upset about. But, it's quite interesting. And they're on a campus with other students driving, which is even just as dangerous, and so, because the student is driving and texting and... I scolded a young neighbor of mine the other day because I saw her driving and texting. She can't be but 17. And she said, I was just looking at the navigation. I said, no, you weren't, because you were at the corner. I had walked to the store, and I said, you were at the corner, and you passed your house. You're in your neighborhood. You weren't looking for navigation. You were headed to the store, which you could have walked to instead of driving. It's no struggle. Didn't tell her parents, but... Yeah, I am one of those neighbors, okay? Any questions on...
Well, seriously, let me take advantage of looking straight ahead and seeing Bonnie Fole sitting there, the Imagination Stage. One of the virtues of Imagination Stage is people can see things, and young people, and they don't have to actually endanger themselves, but they see what's happening in the world around them, and it sinks in. And I think we're not talking about kids, because you have to start younger than when they come to UMB, but to really look at each person and try to educate them. And for smoking, same thing. The smoking and the...
And the vaping.
What do you call vaping?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Mamas. Thank you.
Any questions?
No, move approval.
Second, and I think we're all in favor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Pete Ron. I am the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. MDOT is presenting 15 items today. We are withdrawing items 5GM-MOD and 8S-MOD, leaving 13 items for your consideration. I'm available to answer questions or others are.
So 8S is okay. I have questions about that.
And then I would also take the opportunity to comment on the previous remarks about distracted walking is actually a thing. And we have programs within highway safety to address distracted driving and distracted walking, because we have such a high percentage of pedestrian fatalities within Maryland. It's a real problem. And it's many, many people are putting themselves needlessly in danger by doing exactly what was described.
And so what are you looking at an environmental, I read at one point that one of the problems was a sidewalk that actually, I guess, to get rid of rainwater was slanted towards the road, so that when somebody lost control of a bike or something, it just slid towards the road.
The only issue that I'm familiar with regarding a bicycle that was high profile and a sidewalk was a young person who was riding around trash receptacles that had been left on the sidewalk, and riding around that caused them to fall into the roadway.
My understanding was that, yes, I think we're talking about the same thing, but there was no detente. There was nothing to stop the bike from skidding. It wasn't just driving into the road, but skidding into the road.
Yeah. And I think that the cause of that was still whomever it is that had left their trash receptacles in.
No question. Yeah. I'm just saying, when we look at construction and things, can we look at things like that?
Water runoff is a major issue that all of our projects have.
But also curbs, kind of worse. I mean, you're going to fall off a curb. You know, if the person is going around something and they get to a curb, they're going to... That can be a challenge.
And typically, the department does not build sidewalks.
Yeah, I'm not being the best example. I get that. What I'm saying is, when you look at your construction or planning or design, do you look with an eye towards understanding the problems of the pedestrians or the distracted bicyclists or whatever, in addition to moving the traffic along?
Yeah, ADA requirements are... address all those issues about not just a normal pedestrian, but also disadvantaged individuals, disabled individuals, who need to be accommodated within those roadways. That's all part of what we have to do.
Can I ask you, on a different subject, what is the time frame for getting rid of the toll booths at the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, literally, physically removing them?
So before the existing ones are removed, we have to have gantries in place to collect tolls all electronically. Right now, the best estimate is May of next year. We could have gantries in place.
Okay,
step would be to remove the toll booths that are currently there.
Why does it take so long?
Thank you.
Pardon me?
Why does it take so long?
Thank you.
I don't know. It first off, we have to have the contract to design these. The Bay Bridge had not been in the previous priority list for all electronic tolling. And so we had other bridges in which design was occurring. And obviously now implementation at the Francis Scott Key Bridge and at Hayden Bridge, which is coming up. So the Bay Bridge was not in that priority list. It has since moved into that list, but it does require design, and it's actually a complicated design. We have to be able to accommodate vehicles at speed, and we then need to acquire the equipment, and we have to have frankly, contracts amended, which will be coming to the board for the services that we're going to need to add to the back office in dealing with these additional all-electronic tolling. There's a lot to this that goes on behind the scene that you don't see, but that we have to deliver. So May right now is the best estimate for replacement of and installation of new gantries.
That's May of 20.
May of 20. Mm-hmm.
Could I just suggest that you, like fast-drying concrete and 24/7 construction, you figure out how to get this done much more quickly, because there is building outrage among citizens. That's not... I mean, I frankly applaud you, Mr. Secretary, for a lot of the things I read about, but you've got to move on this faster, because otherwise the outrage from the public is going to become overwhelmingly, and it's not fair. I understand the governor is doing everything possible, and you've got a lot of balls up in the air, but you got to get rid of those toll booths faster, because... people are gonna like kid people and say they're going to start jumping off the bridge. They're so mad. So please do something that will accelerate that so that those of us who are concerned about this, on behalf of the public, they can actually see something. I mean, this is not rocket science, putting a item across the Bay Bridge at X altitude that can track these cars' easy pass use. And if you need to use an emergency procurement, great, do it. But don't sit there and say, hey, May is okay. May is not okay. Thanksgiving that I read about today is going to be a nightmare.
And we are trying to encourage people to go early and stay late over the holidays. But the issue is, do we want to have this project done in one season, or do we want it in two? And if we want it in one, it means greater inconvenience now to get it over faster. And we are already seeing substantially shorter backups at the bridge. And so we actually have devices that monitor anger and joy with the department. And there is substantially less anger being expressed within the social networks now. So it's the things that are going on are, you know, our people are accepting, and I believe the fact that when the governor ordered us to do this as quickly as possible, and our efforts now, we do have people working on all sections of the bridge at one time to accelerate this. But there are certain physical conditions and constraints that we have that we're having to deal with, and we can't change those.
Yeah, I'm just reporting back that I think your information is flawed and that you're going to see bigger backups because of the construction schedule. I can understand your logic to tell folks to lump it for a year because it could have been 2 years, but I'm also suggesting that you accelerate this removal of these 1970s technology and have it occur in, let's pick a number, 30 days rather than 180 days. Because that is something that is visible and physical, and the public, I think it will obviously help. I'm sure your people agree that it will help mitigate that bottleneck on the eastbound side of the bridge. So I'm trying to be supportive, but it's going to be hard once this new hurry-up schedule is applied, and you're going to be coming back to us saying, God, we didn't realize everybody was going to be this upset on top of everything else. And so it's friendly suggestion. Accelerate it.
I can assure you, in fact, I can assure everyone, if there is something that can be done to accelerate, we are doing that now. I mean, we are doing it. So it's not even things that will be implemented. It's things that we are implementing and have implemented. And we're making progress. But, again, certain things take X amount of time. And if it takes X amount of time, that's what we've got.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Len, if I could just end by saying, if you could give the board a list of everything that you believe is being done in the time frame and the added costs, I assume these things are costing more.
They are.
And the actual time frame that they're all going to be completed in, because going from 2 years to 1 year is obviously significant, if in fact it's true. So if you could supply that to us on the board, that would be appreciated.
Thank you. That would be good. Thank you very much. And step-by-step actions that you have to take.
I just want to make sure that it's understood. That I have not said or intend to say anything untrue, and that we are providing all the information we have. There is a caveat to all of this, which is if the weather turns
I understand that. I don't know if everyone does. I understand construction, and I understand the system side of it, too, that, you know, takes time. But if you can just lay out the step-by-step of what you have to do, you know, from design to system alterations to construction to demolition, what has to be done, I think that'll be helpful, as well as the other steps that the comptroller's talking about in terms of construction.
We'll have that to you very quickly.
Okay, thank you. I have a question on 7GM Aviation, and this is something, good to see Ricky Smith here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you introduce yourself, please?
For the record, I'm Ricky Smith, Executive Director of MDOT Maryland Aviation Administration.
Okay, thank you. This is a concession contract, Easy Connect Shuttle, and it appears it's app-based. Is this kind of a variation on the Super Shuttle concept?
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Controller. It is a derivation of the Super Shuttle contract. Super Shuttle provides point-to-point service.
Yeah, I was saying concept, not necessarily your contract.
This particular service is direct service from BWI to hotels in downtown Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
So that's the difference.
Okay, so it's not, okay. All right. And I guess the reason I raised it, and it's app-based.
Yes, it is app-based. Okay. So you can make a reservation regardless of where you are in the country.
So is it both ways? So if you're at the Hilton and you're going to the airport, you just on your app schedule a pickup.
It's both directions.
So they compete with the Ubers and Lyfts from that standpoint.
And Super Shuttle.
And Super Shuttle. Yes. Okay. And this is a question maybe for the Secretary, because when I saw that it was an app-based shuttle, I thought about one of the issues that we've been confronting when we talk about the two-generation approach to eliminate poverty. Transportation is a big issue for a number of people, and particularly if you're in distant suburbs or rural communities, that getting to a doctor's appointment, getting to work sites can be a challenge. And I give the example of where I live in Howard County. We have a Howard County Transit, and most of those buses are empty. And I've thought for a long time that type of a van pool and on-demand service was better than fixed routes in certain suburban areas and rural areas. I mean, fixed routes, if you're going from employment centers to particular housing centers during the employment times, are probably good. But when you're running the fixed routes, which I see in my jurisdiction, all day, and you have an empty bus spewing out diesel fumes with no one on the bus during the day, that the better service would be something that is closer to a super shuttle or app-based shuttle service for those who need to get places. But I understand there's some transportation funding issues associated with that. Are you familiar with that?
I am in general. It depends on how specific you want to get.
That the U.S. Department of Transportation provides funding for route-based transit. Is that my understanding correct?
There are funds available that we then carry, that we forward on to local counties and operators. And the Howard County system, the buses you're seeing are actually operated by Howard County. I believe Anne Arundel County is a part of that regional. Right. And we provide them funds that come from the federal government to them for the operation of their system. But they are limited. It's formula-based.
But I understand that. The funds, though, are limited to route-based fixed route transit, which is a challenge when you're not in an urban area or close-in suburb area that people are going to a central place to work and you're picking up from, condensed areas, that it's a challenge.
You're correct. Yes.
So it's something that we need to talk to our federal officials about, bringing our transit systems into the 21st century because they can, fund smaller. Because what it does is it encourages these counties, like what Howard County and Anne Arundel are doing, to buy these gigantic buses. And it doesn't matter if they get a hybrid bus or an electric bus. They're pounding on the pavement with no one in there. And so that was my soapbox for this part of the Board of Public Works.
Glad to be a part of it, Governor.
I think
can I just...
on that same line, Ricky, do you have any idea what the, in general, what the fare is for from there to pick a downtown hotel? I don't know.
So, so for this service, the fare is $30 per person. But if you want to reserve one of the buses for a group, it's $12 per person in the group. So if you compare that to our taxi service, for example, it's about $32 for a taxi from BWI to one of the hotels downtown Baltimore.
I was just thinking about our previous discussion about the employees there, the people who work at the airport, and one of their major problems being transportation, particularly when they have difficult hour shifts.
So we've worked closely with MDOT MTA on expanded service to BWI, not just the transit service, but also the light rail service. I mean, they're stretching the hours of light rail services as far as they can without violating the time they need to do
11 o'clock.
Repairs, right? That continues to be work that we're engaging with MTA. As the airport grows, more employees demand more access to the airport. They've worked very closely with us, for example, to provide service to the new cargo facility that's opened at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
That was a major plus for making that facility work. And so they're doing everything they can. It's a challenge to meet their needs 100%, but I think they're doing the best they can.
That's what we are doing is we are concentrating on work centers, and as the high flyer develops their facilities at the airport, we're looking at potentially 1,000 employees who are at the midfield cargo facility, and we've changed our bus routes to provide access, and we're providing that during the work hours for the existing shifts. But as that changes, what we're having to do, but it's frankly a good management approach, is that three times a year we're looking at where are people using our transit system, where are they not, and when we need more service in some areas, we're moving buses from where they're not to where they are needing to go, so that we don't have the empty buses that people talk about.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the people who are actually working at the airport, not the new trip, just at our present airport. As you know, many of them making living wage, but not anymore. If you've got to go out to the airport, back to the city, out to the airport, back at difficult hours, at the ends of evening shifts or the beginning of morning shifts, there's not a lot available that anyone can afford.
Administrator Quinn is here if you would like the specific question about how they're managing demand at the airport.
Well, we can, if you want. I don't want to delay everybody, but
okay.
I am very interested in pursuing that.
Kevin Quinn, Administrator, MDOT MTA. Transportation to the airport is really important to us, not just for people using the airport, people working at the airport as well. So we are doing as best we can with our light rail service. We use those off hours of light rail to do maintenance on the tracks. That's a really important time for us, as Ricky noted. We also have our local bus services, Local Link 75, which goes around there, and we've recently adjusted those hours to get folks to work at Matheson Way near the airport and some other areas, as the Secretary noted. So we look three times a year at adjusting bus schedules to meet those shift worker times. And even just recently, we're working with other employers like Amazon and others that ramp up, especially during the holiday times, which can get a little crazy from a work schedule perspective, to meet those shift times even better. And we're able to make those adjustments kind of on the fly. And we're trying to take a more nimble approach in working with employers to do that.
Well, maybe we'll be in touch and follow up to learn a little more specifics. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Secretary, I want to mention items 11 through 14, and you don't need to bring anyone up. 11M, it's motor vehicles maintenance contract. I commend them for putting it into the Small Business Reserve Program. $1.3 million award to certified small business. I also commend them for MBA again on another contract, janitorial services that they put into the Small Business Reserve Program. I commend them, but I NBA as well as State Highway on 13 and 14 that they put out a bid that a small business actually won the bid, won both bids. These could very well have been put into the reserve program, and so I'd ask that you suggest to your moguls, all your moguls, and I have Ricky Smith and Quinn here, that they do more in terms of putting projects into the Small Business Reserve Program. And like with 11, it doesn't have to be below $1 million because these contractors can do that work. So I just want to both commend and encourage utilization of the Small Business Reserve Program. Thank you. Thank you.
Could I just, a quick question on 9M, which I understand is under, is still before the Board of Contract Appeals. What happens if, I find this a confusing situation.
What happens if we lose the appeal?
Yeah.
Moot.
Well,
it sounds like it's moot. I think the whole appeal is moot, from my understanding.
Is it?
And so, who we've got? We've got Joe here. But we have gone through numerous attempts in addressing this, and the problem is we can't put this off any longer. Right now, we have $53 million programmed over the coming 5 years to address elevators and escalators within our system.
I get that, and I don't intend to vote against this item, but I'm just confused about where we are and what happens.
Yeah, the winner is protesting.
Yeah, that's strange.
I won, but I'm suing you for winning.
For the record, Joe Setatal, Director of Procurement and .MTA. I also have David Brown with us, who is with our AAG and has been working on this case, so he can address any of those questions. In short, you're absolutely right. The incumbent is the one protesting, so if they get awarded this contract based on your vote and then also win the appeal, then the contract would be...
Well, basically, if they did win, my understanding, my expectation would be that they would withdraw the appeal because it would be moot at that time. Because if they were to proceed after being awarded the contract and they were to win, then the remedy they requested was for the solicitation to be canceled. And so they couldn't very well win the contract of a solicitation that was canceled. So it is kind of a cat and mouse type of thing, but... So this proceed and the contract be awarded, my expectation is that they will withdraw and it will be moved.
I believe that's correct, and I think this is a tremendous company that you're negotiating with. I think they got on crosshairs with you over the fact that their bidding information was released when the last procurement was halted for some reason. I'm not even sure about all that, but I'm very pleased that you have a Baltimore company that has lots of workers who get a path to the middle class, frankly, because of this company. And as the Lieutenant Governor said, the maintenance has been deferred for some time. And I can understand the bewilderment of some of us looking at the history of this, but this is a good contract. I'm glad you're moving forward. And obviously, I'm very interested in employing skilled people in the Baltimore regional area, so job well done.
Thank you.
I wouldn't worry about the protest.
Okay. Any other questions?
No.
Any other questions on transportation agenda?
No, move approval.
Okay, we're all in favor. Thank you. Department of General Services.
Governor, if I could, the treasurer mentioned Bonnie Fogel. This is a legendary person in the Washington region. Yeah, I wonder if Bonnie, you could come up and just explain item 29.
Yeah, I was going to mention that before. But we haven't gotten to general services yet. We're always on general services, but he hasn't.
I was waiting for him to get himself out of the gallery. So, but good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. Our department has 41 items on our agenda, including two supplementals. We are withdrawing item 4, and we have agency representation to answer any questions you may have at this time.
I'd still love item 29. I don't know whether with your approval, Governor.
Yeah, I was going to mention it, but bring it up now.
Yep, because this is a person who represents more for the arts and the culture of the Washington area in Maryland than anybody could possibly ever be in the past or be in the future. Bonnie, thank you for what you represent. An unbelievable legacy and achievement that you have. And wasn't there some kind of partnership that you're about to embark upon? Is that you personally, or is that the Imagination Stage?
I'm Bonnie Fogle, Imagination Stage. I'm the founder and the executive director, and I've had the real pleasure of knowing Comptroller and the Treasurer for 30 of the 40 years that we're now celebrating.
And what was Imagination Stage before it was
Before we were the Bethesda Academy of Performing Arts. Somewhat pretentious name, but after the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts in London. Are you referring to our new partnership with the Whittle?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. We just put up a press release this week. Imagination Stage has formed a partnership with the Whittle School and Studios, which is a global school system, new school system. They are opening their first two schools. They have opened this September, one in Washington, D.C., in the former Intelstat building on Connecticut Avenue at Van Ness. The other, with which we are immediately concerned, is in Shenzhen, China, where we are the consultant on bringing in a theater program to that school. The school project is for 33 schools in 11 countries in the next decade, and we hope to be very much associated with those. But we were here today to say thank you and to be in support of the Governor's Capital Project, support of a new warehouse that Imagination Stage wishes to purchase in Maryland, which will allow us to, instead of rent, to have a building that we own, and that will have huge economic impact on Imagination Stage. It will save us a great deal of money, which we need to do. Even though we're a successful arts organization, we're always suffering, it seems. And also it will allow us to share our space with other smaller nonprofits who are looking for space to build their sets. So thank you very much for that support.
And people will learn how to... what goes into building sets and doing things besides.
It's all part of the program
on the stage. Yeah.
It's all behind the scenes. And I've had the pleasure of many years ago taking my daughters there to Imagination Stage.
Wow. That's fabulous. Thank you.
Okay. Go back to earlier in the agenda. Five, information technology, five IT. The Retroactive Higher Education Commission?
Yes, so Aubrey Bascom, Director of Budget and Management.
Actually, I'm Jeff Newman, Assistant Secretary for Finance and Administration. I'm accompanied by Donna Thomas, our Director of the Office of Financial Assistance, Paris Jackson, the Director of Information Technology, and Aubrey is here as well.
And you're with which entity?
Maryland Higher Education.
Okay.
You're on behalf of the Secretary.
Okay.
Who had to attend.
All right. I didn't get that part. My question on this is a sole source contract that it appears that you're changing the contract that had several renewals in it to make it just a straight four-year contract.
That is correct. This contract was approved in August of 2018. It was a competitively bid contract that you approved back in 2018 with 1 year and then 4 one-year options. When we went to exercise the first option this August, we notified the vendor in August of 2019. And then we also notified the Department of Information Technology on this contract in September. We received advice back from the Department of Information Technology that the contract had lapsed because it was now September and that we couldn't exercise the option. So we're returning to retroactively enact the contract with all 4 years under this contract, so we do not have to exercise
every year. Come back. Yeah. Now, I understand also that higher education originally wanted this to be a five-year contract. Why was it not a five-year contract, or why? What was the?
Yeah. Well, this was a brand new vendor that that won the award for the contract. So we did, and I think it was prudent advice that we do this one-year contract with the options in case we weren't satisfied with their performance after the first year.
Well, most state contracts have termination for convenience,
yes.
And so you could do that type of thing anyway. I mean, I'm not blaming you. I'm actually blaming the procurement group that was in charge, and that's pre-you, Bob, so, and pre the reorganization that took place, is that they should have been looking at this. If they're following what tends to be typical practice, you would have a termination for complete convenience, or you have a 1 year and then a 4 year renewal, or a 2 year a renewal. So, okay, all right. I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Could I just pile on that? Just to say, we don't have enough people in the state working on procurement. I think we all agree on that, and everybody has a lot of things to do. And it seems to me that dividing a five-year contract maybe into 1 and 4, I can see that makes sense, although you can terminate for convenience, and I gather this vendor has been excellent.
Right.
But
yes.
To make people come back
every year
just doesn't make sense.
Right. So some of my comments are just kind of to send a message to the departments, not necessarily you, but the control agencies in terms of when they're working with their customers, their clients, that they think further along and think about the workflow and work that has to be done, that, you're testing them out, maybe it's a 1 year, but then not to require them to keep coming back.
So. And we will gladly echo you.
Thank you. I know that was something that you all wanted initially. So
yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Number one.
Oh, okay. Number one.
I should have asked before
contract.
This, and I.
No, go ahead.
I just am not quite sure what it is. The consultant services for technical reviews. How does this fit into the whole?
This is Lauren Buckler, Assistant Secretary for Capital Construction.
Good morning.
What is this?
Good morning, members of the board. So this item is outsourced review for K-12 and community college schools. We hit peaks and valleys with those submissions because of the timing of school construction. School construction typically occurs in the summer because that's when the schools aren't occupied. So the design reviews are heavy in the winter. They come into our office for approval. Our staff stay stagnant during the entire year. So we have the outsourcing ability to send some of these out for review to firms in the area.
DGS is part of school construction.
Yes.
This is not setting up another office. That's what.
Thank you.
No.
Great. Thank you.
Super. Okay. Thanks.
That's why DGS sits on the interagency committee for school construction.
Yeah.
And, Governor, I would make a note on this, that 50% of the contracts that would be awarded to this are going to S.
Small Business Reserve.
Small Business Reserve.
Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent. Very good. Okay. 6IT Mod,
Danny Mays, Director of Procurement.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was just somewhat surprised initially that we are purchasing $67.5 million per year of IT equipment that doesn't include laptops and desktops. I was told that this is kind of statewide, and it's a statewide contract that the other agencies in their budgets are purchasing this much information technology
That's
in a year's
correct.
Time. Okay. I would hope we're seeing efficiencies in the operations, and that's not necessarily your call, but these departments, if they're buying the IT equipment, they're not necessarily, and this would be turning to the secretary, that they're not just following the whims of the Dell and the Microsoft salesperson that comes in and says, hey, you need the latest and greatest of this and that, but it's
so
exactly
I can say,
something that's needed.
From a procurement standpoint, we work very collaboratively with Secretary Leahy and the DOIT team. All transactions that are purchased off of this contract must be blessed by his team and our office before they are undertaken. So the purchases are aligned within the IT master plan, so the agencies aren't going rogue and spending off the contract in a way that doesn't benefit the state's overall plan.
Anything to add, Mr. Secretary?
Thank you, Governor. Mike Leahy, Secretary of DOIT. Yes, we are working very collaboratively, and as the procurement process has changed, we've also changed our intake process for not only projects but purchases of capital goods, and there will be additional insight because we are asking people to project things earlier so that we can look for those efficiencies to buy things under larger bulk contracts.
Governor, since you've started this, could I flip over to 41 IT? It's a supplemental, but it falls in with this, I think. Department of Health is procuring a lot of stuff. 1,620 desktops, 540 laptops, 500 docking stations with Windows 10 because, as I understand it, at the end of this calendar year, I don't have any problem with it. At the end of this calendar year,
Windows 7 will go out of support. That's
correct.
And
this is not the only agency that is dependent.
No. Well,
so what are we doing to make sure that everybody else can continue operating?
Absolutely. We have a plan to do it. And at this point, we expect 95% of the systems that are currently operating on Windows 7 or earlier will be moved to Windows 10. The remaining systems will be moved, but we have difficulties because there are legacy technologies that they are connected to that don't work with Windows 10. So we are working out those differentiations, and we expect to have everything up to date operating under Windows 10 in the coming year.
In the coming year. So things are not going to collapse on the 1st of January?
No, not at all. We have agreements with Microsoft that systems we cannot update, they will continue to support at an additional cost.
Great. Let me ask you two things. Can you just send a letter to us saying that?
Sure.
And secondly, can we follow up on there are particular agencies that I'm concerned
sure.
about?
Happy to talk to you about it.
Thank you. God bless you all.
I had a question on 9IT, but I think that's been previously answered. I was happy to see it was certified. Small business was getting a task order under
Absolutely.
The Cox contract as well as under the, yes, under the Cox contract. So I'm fine with that. There is a provision in 9IT with Navigator. It's a task order. They had a 24% MBE goal, and their compliance is at 4.23%, and their task order is for another $2.2 million. there appears to be no way that they're going to get to that 24% with two. I mean, they could, but it's going to be a challenge for them to get to that point with where they are.
Governor Kristi Noser, I'm that MBA administrator. We believe we've got a plan in place with them that we started in August where they've dedicated an MBA resource to the contract. While we wouldn't be able to achieve that under the original contract, with the extension, we believe that we can get them there. This is a contract through which we issue task orders, and so we've now ensured that in each of those task orders that we issue, they have that MBE resource as part of that effort. And we do believe that we'll be able to get there with the extension to that original goal.
Now, Navigator Management partners, I guess they're kind of an integrator of some sort or a staffing entity?
Yes, they provide business process reengineering services, and so part of the issue is we didn't start really utilizing them early on and when the contract was awarded. We've got an IT modernization going on at the same time, as you know, and we're trying to synchronize some of these things, and so now we're letting the task orders more quickly, which gives more opportunity for the MBE to get those opportunities.
Okay. All right. I'm just concerned when I see these, you know, this type of shortfall, and the Secretary knows I'm having a meeting with a number of the entities, our agencies and departments, to talk about the challenges that are coming to me with regard to the MBE program. I think that some of these projects we can, you know, eliminate or alleviate these challenges if. And this case, this may not be the case, but I've heard some egregious cases where the contractor is doing certain things that are basically making it difficult for the MBE to do its work, and then blaming the MBE and trying to then move them out. This is not the case here. I just want to say that. And so we're going to talk about what actions can be taken where, in my mind, the contractor, the prime contractor, is in violation of their contract because they said they were going to do certain things, as well as in violation of the spirit and policy of the contract, which could then, in my mind, you know, mean that they either have breached the contract and we can terminate for cause or utilize our termination for convenience. And in some cases where that MBE was actually doing most of the work with supervision, emergency contract to the MBE until we can approve. I think that those types of things would send a message that we're serious about the program. Secondarily, take a closer look and thank you for what you've done in the Small Business Reserve Program, but some of these could be in the Small Business Reserve Program as well.
No, we'll certainly continue to look at it. I will say the Prime in this instance was very receptive to the improvement plan we put in place for them. They've already got the MBE in the current task orders that they're doing today, so
Okay. We
feel confident that working with them, it is something we take seriously. We've got a good history in terms of our MBE rate at M.MBA, and it's something we take seriously.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I had some other. I was just going to point out the capital grants and loans, which you already imagination stage. Do you have any other questions on any of the others besides the capital grants and loans?
Well, I just wanted to do a shout out on the Hoon Building, 28. I think it is a tremendously exciting example of reuse of older buildings that had been sitting there for so long, had been constructed specifically for another purpose, and it's going to be reused, repurposed in a way that is really going to, I believe, be significantly instrumental in revitalizing the neighborhood.
Right. That is part of an ongoing area in that portion of East Baltimore. It's within walking distance of Hopkins and the EBDI. Development and project that the state has put a lot of investment in, and it is an exciting opportunity for that section of East Baltimore. I want to mention 24 CGL, and I see former Senator and Secretary McCabe here. I think you've come up, sir.
Yes. Good morning.
Moore is here, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, and various secretaries here. My name is Chris McCabe. I'm the Executive Director of Chrysalis House. It's a drug and alcohol treatment center in Crownsville next to the Crownsville State Hospital. I've been there about 4.5 years. We are gender specific. We serve approximately 165 women last year with severe substance use and mental health disorders. And in addition, we serve about 65 children. We are unique in Maryland in that we can serve women with these disorders while their children are with them, and it's just a great opportunity. I'm honored to be here. We appreciate all the support that the Maryland General Assembly has given us towards a campus expansion, and we've also received support, a capital grant from Anne Arundel County Government, and we're also working with various state agencies, including the Department of Housing and Community Development, the Maryland Department of Health, and, of course, the Department of General Services that is helping us this area right here. I just want to introduce Lauren Weissman, who's our Director of Development, who works very closely with me because all of our women are on medical assistance. So all the taxpayers of Maryland essentially are supporting the programs and services we provide. So Lauren helps our organization apply for public grants, and we also are looking for private support as well. So Mr. Lieutenant Governor, I appreciate your visit a couple of years ago. Madam Treasurer, the same. And a picture is worth 1,000 words. It's great to see the public investment really make a difference in the lives of people who are exceptionally vulnerable. So.
Well, thank you for the work that you're doing there. I was quite impressed, and it was very good to speak to the ladies there that are going through the process of recovery, and the fact that they're able to do this with their children is an added benefit. That's one less stress that they have to encounter as on their road to recovery. So I thank you very much.
In that regard, I was honored to be the Secretary of the Department of Human Resources, which is now Human Services, and at least, I'm going to say, 60% of the women or the children in the child welfare system in Maryland and probably across the country are because of an addiction in the family. And so part of what we also do at Chrysalis House is we reunite women with their children who may be in temporary foster care or kinship care while their moms are going through treatment. So we have Departments of Social Service visiting us, I'm going to say, 2 or 3 times a week. So we work very closely with the Departments of Social Services. So we're just excited about what we do. We're on the front lines of the opioid crisis. It's very real. Despite our best efforts, there are times when women leave us, that we gave them all the tools we could, and they overdose, and we've lost women. And that's the reality of where we are. But we're glad we have an opportunity to serve the state.
Thank you.
No, it's interesting. We started off this morning, talking about Elijah Cummings and the inspirations that he has always been and that his service on Friday was. And I just think, Chris, to finish up with Chrysalis House, it just shows you from beginning to end what can be done in the community if the community pulls together.
Thank you all very much.
Good to see you. Okay, I'm not going to keep you too much longer. I have a question on 34 CGL. This is the Bromo Seltzer Tower. I wanted to know what is going on there. I know a couple of years ago there was some talk about it being a. Is there anyone here? Or,
Shirley Kennedy.
Is there someone?
Then I'll take your question.
I don't think we have anyone. I know a couple of years ago there was talk of it being turned into condominiums or something, or apartment for artists or art compound or something of that nature. And I saw this capital grant for some design and repair. I just wanted to know what's going on there. It still lights up.
Still lights are up, and I believe that the Zola development was part of the Bromo Seltzer.
The whom development?
Zola.
Oh, okay.
Zola. But what we'll do is we'll, at that time, my knowledge of the tower, and this is under a previous hat, it was exactly that, but we can follow up with that since I don't have the particulars.
So you believe that at least at some point it was
at some point
apartments for artists?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I just was curious when I saw that. I want to commend on 36, Vehicles for Change. They do a lot of good work. I don't know if we have anyone from Vehicles for Change.
I don't believe we have anyone. Usually it's Marty Schwartz that comes out for Vehicles for Change.
Okay, but they do a very good job. And if anyone has gone over to their site, they train people on automotive repairs. They actually will do repair work if you need repair work on your vehicle. Of course, they accept vehicles that they repair and then make available to individuals that need transportation. So
we have entered into a focus on Vehicles for Change, the department has, and we engaged a pilot where actually Vehicles for Change services our state vehicles. Hmm. And they have a mobile response center, which allows for efficiencies to save hours for state employees. So at State Center, we have them come out, and we line up the cars, and they can do 5, 10, 15 cars. And so we're looking to see what we can do to scale that up. We've also introduced the same program here in Annapolis to come out to the lot outside of St. John's to service our vehicles. So they've been a great partner.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
I'd like to go.
Okay.
Want to go see it?
Yeah, she should go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My last question, I'm not going to 39 CGL. I have some questions about this. This is the real estate holdings, purchase a converted row house apartment building.
We have David Denbrough.
Good morning. May it please the board. My name is Dana Denbrough, Director of Procurement for the Maryland Department of Health, and I'm here to introduce Ahmed Awad, who can give you the details. We also have a representative of Alliance with us.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Treasurer and Mr. Comptroller. I'm the Administrator for the Office of Property Management and Development. The property that we're looking at is a three-story building. Will be divided into three studio apartments, three one-bedroom apartments, and then three two-bedroom apartments. So each individual in the two-bedroom apartments will be in separate bedrooms in that unit. Mr. Scott Rose is representing Alliance, and he would be able to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. You may have partially answered the question I have, because the document I have, it says that the property would be made available to three persons suffering from mental illness. And the question I had, you have nine units, and so how do you make it this, if it's just nine people, who's the sap that gets the three, the studios versus the one person who gets the three bedrooms? So it sounds like you can have more than nine
people.
Yes,
the reason I put in the nine persons here is that in some cases you'll get somebody who says, so we filled up the single bedrooms, and now we're left with the two-bedroom units. We have one individual, he says, I don't want to share. So we are a minimum nine people, and a maximum of additional people, I believe it's 12.
Okay. So I could just say, I don't want to share, and I get a three-bedroom suite. And
it's a two-bedroom suite.
Two-bedroom, I'm sorry, yeah.
I think that Mr. Rose will be able to answer that, because their vetting system, the way they vet people,
okay.
I'm pretty sure it would eliminate that kind of issue.
Maybe you can help.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Scott Rose. I'm the Chief of Rehabilitation Recovery Service for Shepherd Pratt. Alliance is a part of Shepherd Pratt Health System.
Okay.
So it's a clinical decision who gets what apartment. It's based on a number of factors, the individual's skills, their preferences. There are some individuals that want to live with other folks, so we would place them in a two-bedroom apartment. There are some folks that either want or need to live on their own. I anticipate that we'll be able to fill all the beds. What Ahmed was referring to is every now and then, if the only unit left is a two-bedroom apartment, and that individual's mental health issues are such that it's better not to put a second person in for a while, then we might have some space there. But we anticipate
that
being filled.
All right. I understand that. And I guess if the single, the studio, or the one-bedroom opens up, you can move them. If maybe.
Exactly.
All right. That was just that's what struck me immediately when you said nine people, nine units, and it's like three of these units are two bedrooms and one is one bedroom, and you're sticking to other people. Typically, there's jealousy. Wait a minute, why does he get the two bedroom and I'm in this studio apartment? So.
Very good question, Mr. Lieutenant Governor. It's actually a capacity of 12, so we're going to do a lot of good.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I am chairing a mental health and behavioral health commission. Mental illness is something that we as a country and a state have not done a good job, and it starts with the deinstitutionalization. We went way too far with it in terms of there was supposed to be a place for people to go, and it didn't really happen, and then all of a sudden we said, oh, we have a homeless issue, and many of the individuals are suffering from mental illness, and we are not really addressing it, and so we're looking at what we can do on the state level, but also calling on our federal partners to really take a look at some of the regulations that are in place, because there's so many barriers to getting help for individuals, be it the mental health restrictions, HIPAA restrictions, substance use disorder restrictions, that we need some assistance from our federal partners to look into that, as well as funding in terms of how we take care of a person who truly can't take care of themselves. And I give the example of the University of Maryland Hospital in Baltimore a couple of years ago, where the woman was cast out on the street, and she clearly could not take care of herself. And our systems are set up that we, if they stabilize the person, they're considered voluntarily committed, and then they go. And we wouldn't do that with an Alzheimer's patient. We wouldn't just say to, an Alzheimer's patient, we wouldn't just open the door and let them wander. And so we need to really take a close look at what we do here. So thank you. Any more questions on general services?
I just have a quick question on 40IP, and that is MAFIS 2 history now?
Sorry, I didn't mean
40IP.
We're re-upping MAFIS 1, I get that.
Yes.
It's really sort of, I assume a yes or no. Maybe not.
Hello. Good morning, Secretary Robert Green, Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. I'm joined by Kevin Combs, our Chief Information Officer. This is for a maintenance and hardware contract for our MAFIS 1 system.
Right.
This is a system that was installed in 2008. In 2018, we have entered into another contract for MAFIS 2, but this sustains MAFIS 1, our current operating system, while we move forward.
So we're still planning and on track to move to MAFIS 2?
MAFIS 2 is an already signed contract. It's already in place. It's been approved by the Board of Public Works and is moving forward.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your service on the Mental Health Commission, too.
Thank you for having me.
Our prison and jail system is probably the largest mental health providers in the country. Okay, any other questions on general services? Do we have a motion?
Move approval.
Thank you.
We're all in favor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.